I am so excited that for 2024, Your Brand Amplified is proudly sponsored by one of my favorite platforms, Simplified. This AI-driven platform is a game changer for design and video content. With Simplified, I can effortlessly transform lengthy videos, such as my podcast, into engaging, shareable clips and streamline workflows with an intuitive subtitle generator. For designers out there, you can explore the AI-powered image generator, create compelling presentations, and design eye-catching YouTube thumbnails with ease. Revolutionize your creative process at simplify.com with a free trial. Now let's dive into today's guest.
Welcome to Your Brand Amplified, the podcast where we interview marketers, publicists, and brands to learn their stories, what makes them tick, and tips and tricks that make a difference.
I recently had the pleasure of meeting Heidi Johnson, who is an amazing woman, so heart-centered, and has created a platform to elevate people who are putting good out into the world. And Heidi, you and I have a similar background. We both love the nonprofit world. We've both been in the for-profit corporate world and have had that juxtaposition of finding meaning and making sure that we are really living in our true purpose. So I just really appreciate you being here.
Thank you for having me. It's wonderful to be here. I'm really excited. And you are my people, 100%.
Yes, I love it when we meet our people.
It's good finding your tribe, right? And there are a lot of helpers in the world, and you are one of them. So I'm really privileged to be here and amongst other helpers. It's great.
Well, I would love for you to share your story of moving from corporate into finding your purpose, your passion, starting your blog and your podcast, Charity Matters. And you're also executive director of the Association of Catholic Student Councils. You've started other guilds. You've done so much for our community. So where did that come from?
Where it came from, probably a lifetime of Catholic school and aunts that are nuns and a lot of guilt. But at the end of the day, a really great family that role modeled service for me my entire life. Service was like brushing your teeth. It's just what you do. It's just you just take care of your neighbor. That's just how I was raised. And I think that seed of compassion that my family planted in me early, it took a while to truly germinate and sprout, but it ultimately did. And it's thriving and going strong now. So that's the good thing. There's hope for everybody, right? It's never too late to start. But, you know, I think there are moments, defining moments that trigger things. And what triggered the germination for me really was I was 35 years old and had three little boys and thought I was living my kind of best domestic life. Had just taken maternity leave, and from a big career in the software business, I handled distribution nationwide for Borland's consumer products division. So I had a really big job, and I was taking a break, and my parents went on vacation to celebrate their 60th birthdays with all their best friends in Mexico, four couples having the time of their lives. And I got that phone call in the middle of the night that changes your life. They were hit by a bus, and all of their three people were killed instantly. My mother, my father was in a coma for a month, and life just changed on an instant. I mean, it just changed completely. So a year of grieving and just surviving and getting through it and not going back to the corporate world. And a year later, almost to the day of the accident, believe it or not, I got a call from a friend of mine who's a priest who went to high school with my husband, great guy. And he said, "Will you come down to Children's Hospital, Los Angeles? I need your help." And I said, "What can I do? What?" "Hey, I got nothing." He's like, "No, I need your help. We have 300,000 kids that come through the hospital each year, and I'm the only chaplain. We have no one to greet a helicopter with a trauma case, to do last rites, to do a blessing before surgery, to do a 911 baptism for a family that's, you know, concerned. And we need to have chaplains of all faiths here at Children's Hospital. And I want to start a nonprofit. And I think you can start the nonprofit. And I want you to bring some friends." And I was like, "Oh, John." But you don't say no to a priest. And so, you know, down I went. And with 10 girlfriends, 10 of us, we went down. And my father had been in a coma from November 9th until Thanksgiving. He came home on Thanksgiving. And we were in the hospital halls on our tour. We met this mother of a child, and she's running through the halls, pushing her 12-year-old son. She said, Father John, I have such great news. He's going home. Her son had been hit by a car and drop off line. And Father John, she was new in LA, had come every single day for a month and was her only emotional lifeline. And she looked at all of us and said, "He's going home on Thanksgiving Day." And in that moment, everything shifted, and I was called to step up and to kind of make some lemonade from my lemons. And I had had incredible faith and support with my parents' accident, and now is in a privileged position to help other families. And so that's what we did. We started a nonprofit called Spiritual Care Guild. And within a year, we had chaplains 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Today, we have a $10 million interfaith center. We've changed the culture of a 100-year-old institution. And we are an international template of pediatric chaplaincy. Hospitals look to CHLA for the model. So that was the hard boot that just shifted my life.
I'm listening to a book called The Surrender Experiment right now. And it really is those moments when you give it up and you give it to God and you just let yourself be guided. And that sounds like that was exactly what happened. All of these things happened for a reason, the good and the bad.
100%.
Get you up to have that empathy, and you already had the skill set. And so the right person to call you at the right time.
You know, it's called divine intervention, call it what you want. You know, Dr. Phil says five defining moments. There's all sorts of things, but there was definitely signs. And, you know, as a little child, I would be told in Catholic school that, you know, you're going to be called by God. And I used to think, oh God, that is so terrifying. Like, I don't want this voice to scare me and call me. But when it happened in the hospital, and I just knew when that mother looked at me, I knew I was being called to serve. There was no denying it. And all the people that I interview at Charity Matters have the similar moment. It's interesting that most of us have a defining moment that made us switch gears from corporate to a life of service.
Yeah.
Oh. And I think you have to be ready for it in some ways. You might not feel that you're ready for it, but it happens when you've prepared, you have all these other skills that you don't even realize are going to be so useful and things that you need in your life of service.
Agreed. Agreed. And, you know, you never know what you're doing. You just do. It's like you jump into the deep end and you learn how to swim. And of all the nonprofit founders I've interviewed, none of them knew what they were doing. But all of them had a moment that just turned the trajectory of their life around, which is exactly, you know, what happened to me. And so that's kind of how Charity Matters started, because after I started the nonprofit, I was like, who are these crazy people who do this work? This work is so hard. And at the time, there was no CNN Heroes. There was no People Magazine Heroes amongst us. There was nothing about nonprofit heroes anywhere in the media of the world. And so I wanted to go in search of my tribe. I wanted to find my people, and I wanted to hear their story. And I was just in awe of how hard it was and how much work it was to build a business that relies on the kindness of others. And who are these people that do this work? Because there's 1.6 million of us in the United States, nonprofits that is, not living nonprofit founders. And these are amazing people, and we don't hear about them. You know, we hear about Kim Kardashian and we hear about whatever's happening, but we don't hear about people that are giving their lives to change other people's lives.
Yeah. So let's get into Charity Matters. You talked a little bit about the reason you started it. I think the word charity also is unique, just like the word philanthropy. A lot of people think about those words in different contexts than probably what you and I think about them in. People hear philanthropy, they think you just have to give a lot of money, but it really also service. And charity, people often think it's just a handout.
Correct.
So what is your definition of charity? And how did you move from blog to podcast? And now, I mean, you've been going for so long. How do you continue to pour into this?
You know, it's a marathon. It's a marathon, not a sprint. You know, for me, charity is love. Charity is love and love of mankind and love of one another. Charity is not a handout. Charity is loving your fellow neighbor and your fellow man. And that's how I think of charity. But I agree with you. So many people have a negative connotation or perhaps a guilt. There's a lot of emotional triggers that come with that word. And philanthropy is so fancy.
Right.
If you're a philanthropist, you're just so fancy. You know, those are the fancy people that give away big money, and the charitable people are the ones that put the money in the red bell at Christmas time, you know, and they're going to put in $1 or $5. That's charity and philanthropy. And to me, there isn't a word that describes that we really have, I think, in our language, a proper word, what you and I do of just serving one another, of just caring about people enough to commit to changing their lives, right? And that's what charity really is. That's what it means to me.
I love that definition. And I do think it's interesting to think about language. I think about other people and how who have different issues or causes and how they're trying to use different language to change things. So maybe, you know, in the course of this conversation or somebody hearing will come up with that thing that
eludes. Right. Well, you're the marketing expert, so maybe you can find one for me.
Yeah. So talk about Charity Matters. You started out as a blog, you moved to a podcast, you interview a wide range of people.
Yeah. So, you know, I went searching for my tribe. And what really happened initially is I had a dream in the middle of the night that I wrote a TV show about nonprofit founders. And I don't have dreams. I don't wake up. I sleep through my children crying. I am like the most solid sleeper in America. So for me to have a dream and to wake up from a dream was extremely unusual. So I wrote it down. I did everything backwards. I wrote the TV show. I called neighbors who were living in LA that were in the business and said, what do I do? And so they told me how to go to the Writers Guild Association and log my treatment and do everything. So I did it. And then I said to my husband, I think I'm going to do this blog thing. And he's like, well, you know, hey, you didn't know how to start a nonprofit and you did that. But he said, your tech skills are really bad. So that seems really bold to me. I think the TV show seems easier for you than the blog. So, but I tackled it and I initially built my own website. It was a whole crazy adventure. But I really just started looking for these people. And it's really no different when you say, you know, I want to buy a red car. And all of a sudden, the filter on your brain, red cars are everywhere. Or you're pregnant. And all of a sudden, every woman you see looks like they're pregnant. Like these different filters we put on our lenses, we put on our camera. And so nonprofit founders started coming out of the woodwork as soon as I kind of had this attention. And so I started interviewing them. And I would, you know, there was no technology. There was not, you know, anything to record the conversations. So I would take meticulous notes and I would do these stories. And I still do, but now I have, you know, technology that can record the conversations. And then when the podcast opportunity, when all of a sudden technology became easier to do a podcast, I hired some wonderful students from USC who do all my editing, fight on, and all of my social media. And the kids were really encouraging me to do it. And they're like, you should do it. And I said, okay, well, I'll do it because I'm having the conversations anyways, but you need to help me with the technology because that's just really not my strong suit. So they did. They literally did. And then, you know, again, when you put that intention out there, I have a dear friend who works at Logitech and he said, I think you should do a podcast. And I said, oh, I know. I just don't have that equipment. Whatever. The next day, here it is. Gave me all the equipment.
Oh, my gosh. Perfect.
Right? I mean, so again, the signs, like you have to do this. So we did. And I think we're 70 some odd episodes in now. And it's just so great to be able to share for people to hear the conversations because, as you know, there's so much in a transcript, you know, it's great. But what was interesting is I truly believed I was going to convert the thousands of blog subscribers to listen to the podcast. That is not what happened. Instead, I created a new audience of listeners. And the people who like to read it, like to read it. I mean, it is not, there's not been a lot of crossover. Wow. So interesting.
Yeah.
Right?
But the great thing is that you're getting your message out to more people.
Yes.
But I think
it's
also a good lesson for everybody listening right now to think about there might be transferable skills, but that doesn't mean the audience is going to transfer with you.
Exactly.
And I know that some people prefer to listen to the podcast, but a lot of younger people prefer to watch an episode.
Right. So now And I haven't done YouTube yet because, you know, here we are in my closet.
Yeah, but it's the important thing is to get started, right?
That's right. But it's really, to me, I just feel like my purpose is to be a messenger of service. I feel like that's why I'm here on this planet to kind of amplify that message. And I'm just a conduit. And so however I can get these stories of these heroes out there is what I want to do. You know, I don't really want to stand on the corner with a sandwich board and a megaphone. Like, that's really not like the angle I'm looking for, but any way that I can tell these stories. And that's really what I want to do.
Yeah. When you started the nonprofit, I know that there are so many nonprofits out there and there's a lot of discussion around, do you start your own? Do you just partner with somebody who's already doing the work? Clearly, what you were doing was unique and now it's a model.
Yes.
But how hard was it to get other people to buy in? Was it difficult? What challenges presented themselves?
You know, yes and no, because there's a lot of things that are great when you start something because it's fun, right? It's the beginning. Like you're starting a remodeling project.
Yeah.
It's fun. When you start everything, it's fun. It's when you kind of get to the middle of it that it gets a little tricky. You know, we were in a unique situation in that Children's Hospital Los Angeles was set up. There are 28 individual nonprofits that support different parts of the hospital.
Wow.
And so we had our own 501c3, so we could go and replicate at other hospitals and open up at other hospitals. But instead, people have just followed our model, which is seriously fine by us. So we had to work within the strains of a hospital, an institution with a lot of structure and a lot of regulation and a lot of stuff. But we looked at the problem. I have to say, I really think the way that we tackled it was pretty smart. USC and Children's Hospital are affiliated. So Children's Hospital Los Angeles is a teaching hospital. So one of the first things we decided to do was our chaplains are called clinical pastoral educators. And we thought if we could become accredited to be a teaching facility for that, then we can, every chaplain that we hire, we can then take 5 students below them. But we really thought about our model. We were very strategic because you don't want to have a model where you're hiring people and then you can't afford to pay them and they're there and then they're not. So we were very strategic in how we built the department and built everything. And there were a lot of processes to go through. And hospitals, you know, there's a lot of politics because there's a lot of, you're right? There's a lot of stuff. So that was an unusual challenge that I think a lot of nonprofits probably wouldn't have that we had. But then the easy and easy is not, it's not the right word, but people will do anything to help a sick child. Right. And everyone can understand a moment where they needed something bigger to believe in, whatever that faith is, to get them through a traumatic moment. And so what the service we were providing and still provide was people just were opening their doors right and left to help us because they'd been at the hospital when that didn't exist. They had... And I've had a number of families that were in the hospital before chaplains and then with a chaplain, and their experience was night and day. And it isn't about religion. It's just about having a lifeline to get you through a very difficult time and someone who's going to help get you through it because the nurses and doctors are so busy taking care of your physical health.
Yeah, having that support.
Having that support. So,
judging, non-judgmental support.
Non-judgmental. So those were some of the challenges. And then some of the things that, you know, were relatively easy. And now that I run a, you know, youth leadership organization, you know, I look at, wow, like youth leadership isn't as sexy. And like people are running to do youth leadership, right? But people will do anything for a sick child and help a sick child or a family. And I'm not saying one is better than another, but there is Maslow's need of hierarchy. And youth leadership is lower on the list, right? So...
Yeah, but you could still transfer the skills, even if it wasn't as easy to get the buy-in.
Correct. Yeah. Correct. The skill set is the same, you know, or the skill that we have, I think that's unique as nonprofit founders versus just running a regular for-profit company, is that we have to really create community and we have to create excitement and buy-in around the cause that we are supporting. And so... We're a little bit activist. We have to create a lot of connection that the corporate world, not that you don't want to have a great culture like that, but it isn't everything. And it's everything for nonprofit.
And it sounds like, and this is something I think is really important, because a lot of times we want to move and just jump into things when we have an idea. So you said yes, but then you really took the time to explore and be thoughtful and set a strong foundation that you knew would set the organization up for success long term. It wasn't just a quick fix of, okay, we need to take care of these families that are here right now. We want to take care of all of the families that come in for the next 100+ years.
Right, right. Yeah, it was definitely a process. And it was interesting because it didn't exist at the hospital. So they didn't even know what to tell us, right? And so we're creating something that doesn't exist. And so they're thinking like, it's like when the iPhone came out or earbuds. No one knew what they were, and so there was no need for it. So when it didn't exist and we're trying to say, no, you need this, and they're like, oh, no, we've been 100 years and we're fine. And we're like, no, you're not. And these families need family-centered care, which is really what the hospital does and a beautiful job of, I will say. So there was a little bit of that, right? Because we were trying to say, no, you need this and you need more of this. And there's trained people to do this of all religions, of religions I don't even know the name of them. We have so many chaplains. They're really, it's not just, you know, it's everything. We've got Buddhist and we've got Jewish and Catholic and everything. We have everything. And it's great.
Yeah. what would you say to somebody who's thinking about starting a nonprofit and also and or incorporating more philanthropy, charity, whatever word you want to use into their existing business?
Okay. Well, that is a great question. I think as far as starting a nonprofit, it's no different than starting a business, although there's a lot of challenges. And like any, if you were starting any business, you would look at the competitive landscape and who else is doing that. Mm-hmm. And I would recommend anyone starting a business or a nonprofit to be looking in the space at their community. And is there someone there doing that? And shadow them, talk to them, learn from them. Because at the end of the day, I mean, sometimes you can just support an existing nonprofit or learn from it or find out maybe you end up taking it over and running it versus recreating the wheel. So I think I would never say tell someone not to start something, but I would definitely say to really look at what exists in the space that you're interested in. And then as far as incorporating more philanthropy into your business, that is a really easy thing to do. And cause marketing is also, as you know, very popular, as long as it's authentic, because people can smell a fake a mile away. It's one of our like instinctual things as human beings that we know if something is real or not. And so if you're, you know, carparts.com, and my son used to work for them, so I'm saying carparts.com, and you want to work for the LA Car Project, which is a nonprofit that takes kids off the street and brings them together to rehab cars, and they then sell those cars to buy the next one and help the next group of kids, that is a beautifully aligned, you know, package right there. And that makes sense, right? It fits your business. You're helping people. It just, oh, that makes sense. But if you're, you know, I don't know, a beauty brand and you want to go help LA Car Projects, it might be like, I don't see that alignment there. So I definitely think you could look. And then one of my favorite places to tell people to go who are just looking either to maybe even try on a nonprofit, maybe before, even if you're a marketing team and you're trying to think of what would be good nonprofits or what would be good fits or what would work. I really think catchafire.org is a wonderful matchmaking business for nonprofits and for volunteers who have skill sets. So I always think it's a great place to just check something on. So even if you are in marketing and you say, I want to go and look at what nonprofits I could do a marketing plan for, Catch a Fire would have it. And then you go through the list and say, wow, we're working for a beauty brand here. And oh my gosh, Glamour Gals is a wonderful organization that helps elderly and teenagers do beauty. And that would be a great fit for us. And we could volunteer there and then get to know them and then see if it's a fit. So those are my...
That's such a great idea, because I think that's one of the problems a lot of people have is they want to get started. They want to get involved in the community, but they don't know where to go. And if you don't know people who are already involved in things who can kind of help ask the questions, and know the landscape of organizations for you to look into. I know when I moved back to LA from San Francisco, I think I looked at Volunteer Match and idealist.org to try to find different organizations. So Catch a Fire is obviously, since that time, there's a lot more out there.
Right.
And this is 20 years ago, but I love that there are those resources for people. And I also love the fact that you mentioned it has to really be in tune with who you are as a business and your core values, because I think that that's a problem we see a lot today is different corporations say that they have certain values on their websites, and they may, but they also may be too busy to actually enact them, or they might not really be, you know, they might be saying, yes, we believe in all these concepts, but they're not actually doing anything. They're not walking the talk.
Right. And I'm not trying to throw any organizations under the bus here, but I watched an ad recently, and I don't think I need to say the company, but I think you guys will probably know. It's a car company, and they are helpers, and they're helping people. And someone drives to the drive-thru to get their donuts, and the drive-thru person is handing the donuts and says, hey, we're part of this company's, you know, helpful team, and we want to give you your donuts, and we want to give you a gym membership. And the guy says, thanks, helpful, you know, person. And I thought, that is the weirdest thing I have ever seen. Like, I don't understand the connection there. Like, okay, you're getting donuts and a gym membership, and it's January, but what does that have to do with this car? I just, you know, so for me, it just didn't connect. And I'm like, what could they have done differently there?
Well, and did they, they weren't asking the person, right? They weren't seeing what the real needs were of the community. And I think that's where so many people get it wrong as well. You think about like what you would do, but you don't think about what the community really needs. And this is something that we use a lot in marketing. It's actually something I'm going to be talking about tonight in my class at USC, Fight On, talking about how do you connect with communities, right? It doesn't matter what, if it's nonprofit, if it's for profit, you have to really get out there and talk to people and assess needs. And that's what you did when you started Spiritual Guild, is you worked in the community to see what are the needs, who do we need to involve, how do we get this started? So it wasn't just that you all were saying, okay, we just need more priests, priests. You were saying,
And I think that you're exactly right. And I think that, you know, God bless marketing teams. I love marketing people. It's fun. It's great. It's creative. But sometimes they might not have a philanthropic sense of the landscape. And just because this sounds like a great marketing idea doesn't mean that it, to your point, addresses the needs and therefore is an authentic fit. And that's where, you know, we kind of look at things and say, oh, okay, some of these things make a lot of sense. And like, oh my God, that makes me really endeared to this brand because they're doing this, because this makes totally sense that Car Parts wants to help give car parts to this great nonprofit. Like, I love that. That makes total sense.
Yeah.
But, you know, the other flip side is, you know, something that doesn't make sense. And so there's a lot of really great ways to just try things on, you know, to try things on to see if it's a fit. And I also think when you do volunteer or you do go through Catch a Fire or any of these volunteer match websites, you get to know the people too. And is that a fit as well for your brand and your team? Because, you know, personalities have to work together. It has to be a fit on a multiple things. It's like dating. There's a lot of things you got to check off to make sure it's a fit, right?
Yeah, absolutely. What are some of the lessons that you've learned from all of the people that you've interviewed over the years with Charity Matters?
So many lessons, so many lessons. You know, I think the lesson that I am reminded of every day is how good people are. People are so good. People are so kind. People innately want to help. People at their core are helpers. And when I think about like who we were as like early human beings, we took care of our tribe. We took care of our neighbors from the very beginning. That's who we're hardwired to be. And sometimes we disconnect from that. And I think that these conversations that I have remind me of that constantly. So that's the first thing. The second thing that I think that I see over and over, even though this work is hard, is incredible gratitude. I think you can't give and not have gratitude. You can't witness someone, whether it's a child that's sick in a hospital or a child that needs to be educated or someone who's hungry or a homeless situation, and not leave that experience feeling grateful for what you have.
Yeah.
And then you can't have joy without gratitude. So they go together. And so doing this work is really a privilege. We get paid in incredible ways that are not financial, but we find this immense gratitude in what we do. And then as a result, we're really joyful, happy people. And people are always like, well, why are you always so happy? I'm like, well, I mean, it's not rainbows and sunshine every day, but at the end of the day, yes, I have incredible gratitude for my life. And I wouldn't have that if I didn't help other people.
Oh, I love that. It's so inspiring. Just that great feeling that you get when you know that other people are doing so much and making an impact and that you're helping them make a bigger impact by interviewing them and sharing their message.
Right. My mantra is, if I can help the helpers, that's how I can help the most people. So if I can just hold up my little tiny flashlight, you know, hopefully the light gets bigger, but a little tiny flashlight to shine the light on these incredible people and their stories and get the word out and also inspire other people to get involved, because they're going to be happier and more joyful and they're going to feel connected and part of their community and they're going to have all those great feelings you get when you help somebody. So it's a win-win-win, which is why I love it.
Well, and speaking of, you are the executive director, as we said, of
an task.
Yes. What do you need help with?
Oh my gosh. When you run a nonprofit, you need help with everything. So TASC is a youth leadership organization, peer-to-peer. So we develop moral leaders who positively impact the world. And we're 40 years old. I inherited this 10 years ago. So I've been doing it for a decade. And our college kids train our high school kids on leadership. Our high school kids train our middle school kids on leadership. And so it's just a peer-to-peer. We serve about 3,500, 4,000 kids a year, and we have 3 employees.
Oh, my gosh.
So help. and it's TASC, T-A-C, ends in S-C, T-A-C-S-C. We were started to create student councils in Catholic schools, and we really don't just do student council. And so 10 years ago, we really switched to leadership is leadership. And so every student has leadership potential. And part of leadership, one of our 4 pillars of leadership is service, which is why I took the job. You cannot lead unless you serve. And I am in the privileged position to inspire, 4,000 kids a year to get involved and serve. So at TASC, you can go to TASC.org, T-A-C-S-E, and we need always, our high schools, we have 31 high school partners. So we love our schools to partner with us, to be involved with our program. We kind of train the trainer in the fall. And then in the spring, we do kind of what we call days of camp, like field trip. We do leadership days where we go to all these high schools and offer these days. Mm-hmm. And then in the summer, we have a summer program. So we always need volunteers and donations and all of those things. And it's just really a beautiful way for me to use my gifts of leadership, but also to inspire other leaders, because that's what real leaders do, right? They create the next generation of leaders. And that's what our world needs. The next generation who's going to run our nonprofits, right? And run our schools, and who are going to want to serve. And so inspiring that in a world where these kids have a lot of noise and a lot of negative stuff coming at them all the time, and reminding them how good they are, and reminding them how amazing they are, and reminding them of their potential. It's really a happy, wonderful place to be. Yeah, it's a great thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And I would argue that it is so important, because these are the future leaders. These are the people who are going to be running organizations. But also, when you start them on their leadership journeys from an early age and figuring out what is really important, that stays with these kids for their entire lives. And it helps them continue to be mentors as they grow up. Helps them continue to be able to speak out for others when they see this.
100%. And, my youngest son went to our program in 7th grade. He's now 22, but he went in 7th grade. And he went kicking and screaming, "I'm not going to crazy council camp. I'm not going to that. No way. I'm going to surf camp. You can't make me go." And, 12-year-old boy. And he went for the week, and no one knew who he was. The last name's Johnson. And at the end of the program, 5 kids get kind of picked to give their little speech about. And I'm sitting next to the head of the Archdiocese of LA, and this boy gets up and he says, "I was born the 3rd son. I was born to follow. I never knew I was a leader until I was at this camp for the week." And this guy leans over to me and he goes, "Heidi, I'm not speaking after that guy. He's killing it." I said, "That's my son." And he's like, "Take a picture, take a picture." And so my son went on to go to high school in Los Angeles, but then he quit football to help his girlfriend start a nonprofit called Once Upon a Room. And it's been in People magazine. He got 300 volunteers, got their whole junior grounds crew going. And then when he went off to college, he went to school in Fort Worth, Texas, and he went to Cook's Children's Hospital and said, "Can we bring this program here?" And took the nonprofit there. And now Once Upon a Room is in 22 hospitals. So my own child is an example of the program that I went through. And he'll say, "Mom, it isn't you and your guilt that made me that person. It was the program that you put me in." So I do know that the work we're doing does work.
Yeah.
And personally, I know, but I know it on many levels. But that's my own personal story.
That's so beautiful.
It's a good thing. It's a good thing. He's a great boy. So they're all good. But it's good stuff.
Well, we will definitely make sure that we have links to TASC and also to Charity Matters in the show notes, so everybody can find you easily, listen to your podcast, read the blog, etc., and get involved. I always love to ask, the last question is, do you have a favorite quote, mantra, verse, words that you live by that every day inspire you?
Why, yes, I do. And I'm going to read it for those of you who are not looking at it. My favorite quote is from Pablo Picasso. And it does kind of go in line with what we teach our kids, that the meaning of life is to find your gift and the purpose is to give it away. And that it's really why we're here, right? We all have gifts and different strengths. We spend, lots of us spend a lifetime trying to figure out what they are. And then how do we use them for the greatest good? Cool. And whatever that is, if it's just, you know, being a mom or taking care of your aging parent or being a great neighbor, or you're a musician and you're going to, you know, an elderly home and playing the piano, whatever it is, the gift that you have, what is it and how do you help others with it? And I think that that is the quote that really I think about a lot.
Well, I really enjoyed our conversation and I love that quote. I'm going to have to put that somewhere when I'm redoing my office right now. Maybe just even on my phone, so I see it on my wallpaper. It's so inspiring.
Thank you. Well, it's the truth. And Picasso, you know, he gave his gifts away. Maybe he made a lot of money. I don't know. But he shared his gifts with the world. And we all have gifts to share. And if we all shared them just a little bit, whatever that is, it would just make everything, the world, a little happier place.
Well, thank you so much for being here, Heidi. I've really loved our conversation. I love that we're connected now, and I can't wait to see what each of us does together and separately next and how I can continue to support your journey.
Thank you, Anika, and thank you for all you're doing to help tell these stories and share and all the good you're doing with all the work with your organization. So I'm really, it was just a great conversation and really fun. So thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you to everybody who is watching or listening to this episode of Your Brand Amplified. And I'll be back again in a few days with another inspiring guest to help motivate you in your life to make sure that you're really living in your purpose every day, whatever that might be.
Want more? Check out amplifywithanika.com or follow me on socials at amplifywithanika.
As we close out today's episode, I want to thank Simplified again for making it possible. For all marketers and creators out there, Simplified is your ally in effortlessly crafting on-brand content with a design and video AI. Discover how AI can enhance your creative process at simplified.com. Start for free and elevate your content game. Thanks for listening, and here's to your next creative breakthrough.